This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This time we promise to talk a little more college basketball as opposed to going here and there.
Like, we don't want to talk about things like online shopping or, you know, college experiences. We don't want to talk about random stuff.
We spent half the time talking about college football in the beginning, so.
Well, I was kind of interested in how that was going to shake out, but now it's starting to look a little more clear what's going to happen with the playoff. But we already got that out of our system, thank God.
Well, yeah, it's a good thing we're on an NBA podcast talking college basketball.
Yeah, I'll leave that with Scott Criscolo and Roger Morissette, I guess. And who's the other one? T.J. McElhoo? But no, T.J. McElhoo's got a really nice show on the Place to Be Nation like podcast network, where he gets a couple of interviews. Scott Criscolo's got the Sports Evolution with Roger Morissette and his crazy crew. So, you know, a lot of interesting stuff there if you want to check it out. Is there anything else to check out on PlaySpeedNation.com right now?
There's a lot of things. There's a big tournament going on. Mm-hmm. They're ranking all holiday stuff. Also, doing holiday shopping, click through the Place to Be Nation site. Mm-hmm. That counts for server fees.
Yeah.
Pays all this, you know, storage and stuff, because there's a lot of free content going out there. At least you could do is click through to.
Yeah, I need to go shopping for a couple of things. You know, I'm probably just going to go right through PlaySpeedNation.com.
Just click through. It costs. There's no added cost to you.
Yeah, Cyber Monday is still here. Don't worry. I mean, if you got to do it, go ahead and go through PlaySpeedNation.com. Click on the Amazon link, and that'll be a nice credit for them. No matter what you buy, you know what I'm saying. You can buy a fucking, like, a dish.
Look, you could buy Bill Burr a new car. You could buy Chris Jericho a new, you know, whatever. But, or you can help out some little guys. Mm-hmm. Click through Place to Be Nation.
So, yeah.
Justin needs more wrestling DVDs.
I wonder which one he's going to get. Is he going to get? I know they were obsessed about that Horseman toy set at Target, because it was for $30. It's like, and I was actually staring at it while I was at Target. I'm like, Is $30 for four toys, is that a deal? Like,
it is what it is these days.
Were you a toy collector? Well, like, what did you collect as a kid?
I was into the Matchbox cars. I had some wrestling figure guys, the thumb ones. Mm-hmm. But it was just mostly Matchbox cars.
I was an avid comic book collector all the way into my late 20s. And then when my wife got pregnant with our first daughter, I quit. I said, I can't afford it. It's over for me. And I'm not that interested anymore.
You know? I was an avid collector till about 2 months ago.
Oh, with the comic books?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Late 20. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved buying the single issues. Now with the trades and with the online, being able to get it on the tablet with subscriptions, it's so much more convenient.
Well, it used to be. It's a lot different nowadays. I was discussing this with my wife, and back then you had to search for them. Mm-hmm. It was super hard to find.
And they were so much more expensive for the single issue. So if you really wanted it, you had to pony up.
Limited edition. You had to know a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy. Now it's just click, 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 click.
It was like you were buying drugs. It was like, hey, you got this, you know? And sometimes you'd have to go to the bin and find a good deal. You know?
Yeah, and it's like, well, okay, then you had to trade stuff, and now it's just, there's no excitement and thrill in a collection. It's mm-hmm. just, well, I have it, I'm done, I made a few clicks, good to go.
Yeah, and now they have all the trades where stories are literally being turned around in a matter of years to turn them into, you know, basically to just gear up the movie franchises. I just saw the trailer for Captain America, and it's Civil War. That series came out in 2006. You know, they turned it around 9 years later into a major movie franchise. You know, it's all the next one they have is the Infinity War. I don't know if you remember that, but they had the Infinity Gauntlet, which was back in the 90s, and that's kind of going to be the next big storyline that they have for the Avengers after Civil War. So, It's so weird to watch these stories that you geeked out over as a kid, and now they turn into all these big major fan geek fest, you know, type of movie franchises, and everybody talks about them, even casual people, and you're kind of like, and you're at a point in your life where you're sort of disinterested.
You know? There's just too much now. They've flooded the market, and then
like Days of Future Past is a great story. You know, I've read it two or three times as a kid, but once I watched the movie, you know, in my early 30s, I was like, yeah, this is good. You know, but if I was a kid and I watched that, I would have been like, this is the greatest thing ever. You know.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now it's just like, but it's, again, with so many to compare it. Oh, that was good, but you know what? The Hulk also had some parts, and Iron Man had some moments, and mm-hmm. It's too much.
Yeah, it's a little much. But enough with comic book talk. Let's talk about college basketball, will we? We're going to stop talking about something not NBA related to another thing that's not NBA related.
This is the none and done yet, or the negative ones and duns.
Yeah, this is the NCAA team, I guess you could call it.
You know, this is the, you know, we're giving you a quick preview of the NBA draft preview.
Well, as quick as we can go, which means we're going to go 2 hours this time.
It will be on part 27 by the time we're done with it. All right, let's go to your town. Let's go to the SEC land.
Well, the SEC... You heard a rumor that they have one really good team there, right?
They have one good team, like three decent teams, and then just a lot of garbage.
Well, you'll never guess who that one really good team is, and that's the Kentucky Wildcats.
I was going to say South Carolina, but okay.
You know, South Carolina's bouncing back this year, so that's actually a good name drop.
Well, let's just start with South Carolina with their one really big recruit. They haven't had a big-name basketball recruit in who knows how long.
They've gotten two out of the state of South Carolina over the last few years. One's a junior named Sindarius Thornwell. He was kind of a big recruit for them at the time. That was Frank Martin's first big recruit. The other one is P.J. Dozier. But Dozier hasn't really played that much yet. You know, they've relied a lot on a lot of you know, Frank Martin had this great ability to recruit international players, particularly from like the Hispanic countries, like, you know, or I don't want to say Hispanic without, you know, sounding like, you know, unintelligent about foreign policy, but like Venezuela and the Dominican Republic, he was able to get really good players to go play for him there because he's Hispanic.
Okay.
I can't even rattle off the names of the Lithuanian players. There's two of them there. One is Leimonis Chatkevicius, and then the other one is Mindaugas Casinas. So that, and then they have a Venezuelan named Michael Carrera, who's like their top rebounder. And they go with Thornwell, who's from Lancaster, South Carolina, and then P.J. Dozier is from Columbia, who was a big-time recruit for them. So they played well to start. They haven't lost yet, but we'll see how it goes once they start playing really tough competition.
Yeah, once the conference play comes in, they're going to be decimated. Most likely, they're going to be decimated by your boys in Kentucky, right?
Well, John Calipari, I don't want to. I mean, we've already done a whole show about Kentucky, okay? Because they really are. I am a Kentucky basketball fan. I always have been. I'm not. I'm sure you're. I know you're a little indifferent to Kentucky basketball, but they are at a point now where they really are the NBA's funnel system for college players going to the NBA. They are the place to be. No pun intended.
So how does this year's freshman class stack up? Is it a miss? Is it a hit? Is Cousin Jamal in good company? Or?
Well, last year's was so good. I mean, at the end of the, you know, we previewed that team last year, but as you look back on it, what did you think of that team that almost went undefeated, finished 38-1, and lost to Wisconsin?
They were too big. There were just too many of them.
They were like stars.
You had the plateau system, and it worked as far as it could go, and it was just, you could see, they seemed to have that tragic flaw in them. And
they didn't have a small forward. I think that was their biggest flaw. Their only small forward after Poitras got injured was Trey Lyles, and I think they overplayed Trey Lyles.
And he's not even a small forward.
Yeah, he's a power. People were comparing him to Carlos Boozer. Man, I've watched him with the Utah Jazz. He's no Carlos Boozer. Please. You know?
That's really not a good fit for him right now in Utah. But we're staying in Kentucky. Let's not get distracted. This is your time.
Well, it's easy to get distracted with the NBA players because you got so many of them that go to the NBA. So it's almost like a who's who. You know, Karl Anthony Towns is gone. Willie Cauley-Stein is gone. Devin Booker went to the Suns. The Harrison twins both departed. So now you have to fill the cupboard up. And they didn't really do a bad job. Now, I have to say also they returned a couple of guys. Tyler Ulis is back. He was a freshman last year. He's like their floor. He's their floor general. Alex Poitras is coming back from a knee injury. He's a senior. He's kind of like a defensive hybrid forward. And then you've got and then they had Marcus Lee, who's just a big boy at 6'10", 6'11". He's just got long arms. He used to play volleyball in high school, so he's just got crazy athleticism. Their new freshmen they bring in are Jamal Murray, who we always joke cousin Jamal. But Jamal Murray came from Canada. We talked about him in the Canada episode. Fantastic player, very tall, strong guard. He can play defense. He can shoot threes. He's just a clutch player. And then the other one is Isaiah Briscoe, who came from New York.
And then the last one?
Skal Labissiere, who came from Haiti. And he's very skinny. But, man, he's got some upside.
Very skinny.
But he's got some upside, though. You know, he's almost like a taller, longer version of Jordan Mickey, if that's a good comparison.
That's not a good comparison. That does not – if you're high end of your potential is Jordan Mickey, you're not really.
Well, Jordan Mickey's got a great motor. You know, and so does Skal Labissiere. But Labissiere's got the wingspan. He's got the turnaround jump shot already. Or the turnaround hook shot, I should say. And defensively very strong. He's already averaging 2 blocks per game. But, yeah, he has no muscle on his bones. He's got to build that up.
So that's probably going to be your top three guy. And we'll see Ulis and Murray. And
well, I think the strength of the team this year is their backcourt. Even though Labissiere is there, Marcus Lee is there, Alex Poitras is there, they still got some other guys like Derek Willis and Charles Matthews, who's kind of a slasher, who came like a highly ranked high school player. Their strength is Ulis, Briscoe, and Jamal Murray. They played Duke in the Champions Classic in Chicago, and Grayson Allen and Derek Thornton could not even get across half court against those guys. They were killing them. They were literally turning them over and doing transition buckets. At, like, hand over fist. It was almost embarrassing.
Okay, so I guess we'll see them in the Final Four again?
Very good chance. I think they're still... I really think that even with all the departures, I still think they're the best team in the country.
All right, so now about the best player in the country.
The best player in the
country. Your boy down the road.
Well, I think he's the most talented player in the country, Ben Simmons at LSU. He's already leading the country in rebounding at about, like, 12 to 14 a game. My problem with Ben, first of all, let me compliment him for all the things that I've seen. He's an incredible passer, just a blessed passer. He's got great court vision. Defensively, he's very strong. He's the team's leader in like blocks and steals, or he's like second in steals, and he leads the team in blocks. He can run the floor like a gazelle. You know, he's just incredibly quick footed, and he's got this total array of skills that is just unmatchable. He's almost unguardable if he's assertive. My problem is he's not always assertive. Sometimes he needs to take more jump shots. Sometimes he needs to be more offensively driven. And I feel like Johnny Jones hasn't really pushed those buttons yet. And they've struggled so far in games where Ben really didn't push the ball and try to call his own number when he should have.
He, from what I've seen, he reminds me of Cleveland LeBron the first time.
Yeah.
Just doesn't have that killer instinct yet. Wants to bring everyone else into the game where he should just be shooting everything.
I said this to somebody else. He reminds me a little bit of 2011 Finals LeBron, where he's obviously really good, but the numbers, you kind of look at him and you're like, yeah, he got a triple-double, but it felt at times like he wasn't even on the court, you know? And I do feel that way sometimes with Ben Simmons, where I feel like he can make his presence known more. And when I say 2011 in the finals, LeBron just kind of had like a meltdown, like a mental meltdown, where he just decided, where the Dallas was throwing zone defense at him, and he could not figure it out, and he just wasn't scoring. He wasn't trying to, you know, make his presence known. I feel like Ben needs to get to that point, but I don't think that's going to happen in college, though. You know, there's a lot of great college players where they never really figure it out in their 1 or 2 years in college, and then they go to the NBA, and they finally start figuring out how to be the best they can be.
Did he really figure out a lot in 20-some-odd games?
Well, I mean, he's only played in, like, what, 7 so far? So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to judge him, but you're the best player, you're the most talented player, probably, and you've got all these people watching you because you're at LSU, you're in a fishbowl, where they have good recruits that go there, but not on this level. So everybody's watching what you do, and you kind of have to carry the team. I have no trust in Chauncey Jones. I think he's a terrible coach. They also brought in some good recruits to go with him because they piggybacked Simmons' commitment. Antonio Blakeney and then Brandon Sampson. So keep an eye on them. Tim Quarterman, I can't stand. I know he's talented, but he's an incredibly frustrating player. They don't have any size underneath at LSU. So, you know, they got 2 games against Kentucky this year. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but as much as John Calipari gets criticized, I do think, Adam, that he's wound up becoming a pretty good tactical coach over the years.
Well, you have to adapt every separate year. You can't. Yeah.
I think in crunch time, Calipari chokes sometimes, no doubt about it. He did in the Final Four last year. He did it when he was with Memphis when they lost to Kansas. I feel like sometimes when it comes to strategy, like right at the end of games, that sometimes he brain farts. But I feel like in terms of strategy and in terms of X's and O's, I think he's a pretty solid coach. I think Chauncey Jones don't even know how to use a clipboard. He's awful. The other one is Malik Newman at Mississippi State. And guess who the head coach at Mississippi State is now?
Ben Howland?
Yeah, the old UCLA and Pittsburgh coach, where the defense was the name of the game. Now, I'm not sure how he's going to adapt in SEC play. He was an Adidas coach, and Adidas is the apparel company for Mississippi State, so it was a good connection. And then they brought in Malik Newman, who was a guy that Kentucky was hard after, along with Ben Simmons. So for him to go Mississippi State and stay in state was a huge, huge coup. But I don't really see much out of this team. I think they have a couple of good players, but I think it's going to be a process for them. And I don't think 1 year Malik Newman's going to do it. It's kind of like when DeJuan Wagner was at Memphis with John Calipari his like first or second year there, and the team wasn't good yet, and Wagner only stayed for a year, but you could see the signs of the team, of the program creeping up. You know,
yep.
I feel the same way about Mississippi State.
And other new coaches in the SEC are...
Well, you got Rick Barnes at Tennessee.
You got Avery Johnson, so...
The general. I don't know about Avery Johnson. I mean, how good of a coach was he really in the NBA? I mean,
but that's really an NBA coach. Here's the question, though. Is SEC sort of positioning themselves to be the one-and-done conference by getting names? Rick Barnes, we've said, is a terrible coach, but he's put a lot of lottery picks in the NBA.
Well, at Texas, where he's got a lot of money behind him.
Yeah, and Tennessee does as well. Bruce Pearl is also...
At Auburn.
His second year at Auburn, so he's now developing his class, and he's put... With all these coaches now who are putting in NBA talent, is that sort of the AAU funnel now?
Well, it has to be... They have to be programs that are willing to embrace it just in the desperation to keep up with Kentucky, and at least try to peak up with 1 good year. So if that means that these programs are willing to just take a player that they know will not be around in the long term, just for the sake of being able to have 1 good year to keep up with the Joneses, then that's, I think they'll take it. And I think that's one of the reasons behind it. I mean, every team in college is desperate for talent. They all want the most talented players that they can find. But if you're able to find the really good ones in order to keep up with Kentucky and raise up the other programs by making them keep up with you, then that's a good thing. I don't think that getting a bunch of one-and-dones in one conference and then draining them out a year later, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
All right, fair enough. Anything else?
Do you have your reservations about that?
No, I just think it's just the sign of the times.
Mm-hmm.
If... you know, Kentucky can't sign everybody, so, well, I can't go to Kentucky. Well,
they didn't get Ben Simmons.
I want to go into the NBA. I need to go, you know, the traditional North Carolina might not be the place for me anymore because they seem to be, you know, developing their talent more as opposed to they're not getting these one-and-done guys. So
We've talked about Billy Donovan at Florida numerous times. We feel like he did great, but he didn't develop as many NBA players as people thought he did. What do you think of what Michael White can do there? Do you think he can be able to at least keep up and keep Florida at a tournament level?
Well, Florida should be at a tournament level just based upon the really just bad bottom. Mm-hmm. There really just is assorted garbage on the floor of
Missouri,
the SEC.
Missouri, it is so sad what has happened in Missouri. That's a great program. They've never made a Final Four. But when Frank Haith left that place, he left nothing behind. And Kip Anderson is not in a position to build that program. That's Mississippi. That's sort of like where Rick Ray was at with Mississippi State, when Rick Stansberry retired. They got nothing. They've got nothing at Missouri. That's kind of sad to watch, you know?
Yeah, that program just got, the basketball program just got stripped bare. They used to put out put out talent.
In the Big 12, when Mike Anderson was there and Norm Stewart was there, man, they had good teams every year. Even Quinn Snyder when he was there, good teams. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M is loaded. This is the best team that Billy Kennedy's had. Daniel House, Alex Caruso, Jalen Jones, and they bring in a freshman, Tyler Davis, who's looked really, really good from the outset. They bring in a new guard named Gilder, who's played well. That's a pretty loaded team. I saw them in the battle for Atlantis against Syracuse. They beat Gonzaga to get there, and they looked very good. Vanderbilt is experienced. They got an NBA player named Damian Jones. I don't know if you've ever been able to catch him. He wears number 30. He's very nice 4/5. He's a center who can put the ball on the floor.
Wow, as opposed to the usual Vanderbilt shoot threes?
Well, they do, still. They got Matthew Fisher Davis and Riley LeChance and Wade Baldwin the fourth. You know, Wade Baldwin was the guy, remember when Kevin Stallings got mad at him because he said something at the handshake line, and he said he was going to kill him?
Yeah,
that's the same guy. That's the starting point guard, Wade Baldwin. But, man, he's a terrific player. And Damian Jones, 7 foot, 245 from Baton Rouge. He averaged 14.5 points a game, 6 rebounds last year. Really, really nice player. You know, they were in the Maui Invitational, and they got to the finals against Kansas. And they also got a 7'1" guy named Luke Cornett. No relation to Jim, I think. I think they're spelled differently, K-O-R-N-E-T, not C-O-R-N-E-T-T-E. But, you know, Luke Cornett is just one of those guys kind of like, you remember A.J. Ogilvy from Australia?
Yep.
Yeah, kind of like that. Just kind of like a typical, you know, stand-around big boy center. And Damian Jones is like the really good talent. Vanderbilt has had some pretty nice teams there. I just think Kevin Stallings has just had a reputation of underachieving when he has his good teams.
Yeah, they're just a team that can't get over the hump.
Yeah, the one that he had that was really good was when they had Josh Jenkins, Festus Ezeli, and Jeffrey Taylor, and a bunch of seniors. And unfortunately, that one year that they had them all, Kentucky had Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And, like, you're not going to beat that team, period.
Yeah.
And they did beat them in the SEC tournament, you know?
But that's just... Really, at that point, the tournament really didn't matter for Kentucky, and unless you're going for that unbeaten streak, they didn't really.
Well, they had already lost that game to Indiana. You remember that game when Watford hit the game-winning three
at
the buzzer. Yeah, that was their first loss early in the year, and then they lost the Vanderbilt game. Those were their only two losses, you know. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, I always say it, man. He was like the postmodern Lou Alcindor. He was one of those dudes where it's like you could not do anything against him. He was that. He wasn't like a 30-point per game guy, but I mean, outside of that, he was just physically there was nothing you could do against him. I don't think Kentucky's got that kind of guy this year in the SEC, but they've got another really talented team. It's kind of like the 2011 team when they had like Brandon Knight and Terrence Jones and I'm trying to remember DeAndre Liggins. Like it's a good team. It's a really good team, and they're still probably the most talented team in the country.
All right. So let's move out Midwest now and see what their counterpart Kansas is doing. They're another one-and-done, let's-restock-every-year franchise team.
You mean new Big Ten.
Whatever they are in a downfall, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the Big 12 is interesting. It's always one of the most competitive conferences.
Used to be.
Well, the only problem with the Big 12 is that they've underperformed in the tournament for the last few years. You know, Baylor got to the Sweet 16 in 2014, but they fizzled out fast. Kansas has underperformed. They've gotten bounced in the second round twice in a row. Oklahoma got to the Sweet 16 last year with Buddy Hield, but they lost to Michigan State. Oklahoma State underachieved badly with Marcus Smart. I feel like Travis Ford dropped the ball with that team.
And the great addition of West Virginia.
Well, West Virginia played pretty well, but I don't know if you watched the Sweet 16 with Kentucky, but Kentucky beat them by, like, a million.
Yeah.
But now they got that new style press Virginia, where they like to do the full court press with Bob Huggins. They play super-duper fast. They play a lot of guards in and out. They've looked pretty good early in the year. They got a lot of guys like Tariq Phillip, Jayshon Page. Devin Williams is their big man. Daxter Miles was the guy that talked all that trash, saying that they were going to beat the first team to beat Kentucky, and he scored no points in the Sweet 16, but he's played well, you know, coming back. It's a very deep team. They're kind of a gimmicky team, though, is the problem.
Well, you gotta be.
Why is that?
Because you don't have really the talent to beat teams by skill, so you have to sort of be that gimmicky team to sort of distinguish yourself, to sort of be on the top upper end as opposed to just being assorted fodder.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other team I like is Iowa State. Now, Iowa State lost the mayor, Fred Hoiberg. Hoiberg went to Chicago. As an aside, how's Hoiberg working out in Chicago for you?
Supposedly, he seems to be doing well. He hasn't been run out by the media yet, but season is still early, and the media is not the most friendly of people up there, and once winter hits and things start freezing over, we'll start seeing if, you know, Joakim Noah's happy with 20 minutes a game.
You know what's funny? If you look at the numbers between last season and this season with Chicago, it's almost exactly the same.
Yeah, because it's exactly the same team.
But you got the new style where they shoot more threes, and they definitely shoot more threes.
But it's the same result. So it's like, well, what are you really doing differently? I still am sort of confused why – well, obviously we're not confused because there's no room, but – Bobby Portis should be getting minutes on that squad.
Well, I think that there's just this real crazy loyalty to Noah, and with Noah, it's like that's a guy who might get traded. You know, if they really feel like it's not fitting anymore. Rose has played well, you know, but
he's not superstar elite.
No, not it's sad to say that, Adam, but it really is true.
Well, we'll put it this way. He's playing.
If we did point guard rankings, I probably wouldn't even put him in the top 10.
Probably not.
I'm sorry, but it's just Derek is at a point where
he's on the downswing and his contract is slowly becoming an albatross. But Iowa State, what have they done post?
Well, they replaced Fred Hoiberg with Steve Prohm, who was the head coach at Murray State. Now, Murray State had this one great year when Prohm took over for Billy Kennedy when he left for Texas A&M. You see how this all works. And so Prohm's Murray State Racers with Isaiah Cannon, they almost went undefeated in the regular season. They lost in the second round to Marquette in 2012. They had another few good years, one with Cannon and the other with Cameron Payne, yeah, thank you. And they got bounced by Belmont almost every time in the NCAA tournament. And now he's off to Iowa State. Murray State had a team that was a decent defensive team, but they loved the three ball. And Iowa State with Fred Hoiberg loves the three ball. So guess what they do? They love the three ball. And they got a lot of guys that can do it. They got Abdul Nader. They got Naz Mitru-Long. They've got, I'm trying to remember, Matt Thomas. And Monte Morris, Fred Hoiberg left behind a very nice team at Iowa State. It's a team that can do a lot of damage. Offensively, they're incredibly good. They're very efficient. You know, George Niang is a guy that got a lot of All-American looks. I don't know if George Niang is really like an All-American guy, but he's an incredibly efficient stretch four type of big man. He's almost like a point forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with I get the sort of reminder of them, like when Bill Self took over for Roy Williams at Kansas, and Kansas kind of had a different style of play with the same players, but they kind of – and it's not necessarily like – it's not. I'm not saying that Bill Self was better than Roy Williams. It's just that the new – it's good to have new eyes for a for the same roster. Because you get a different, you get different looks, you get, you know, you get a fresh take, you get players that are more motivated, and you get more out of guys that you didn't think you would get. I got the same feeling from Bruce Weber with that Illinois team that you and I love so much from 2005 with Dee Brown and Luther Head and Darren Williams. You know, Bill Self had a nice team there, but it was very different from the Bruce Weber team. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then the other one I was trying to remember was when Frank Haith took over at Missouri. When Mike Anderson went to Arkansas, and they became kind of a bomb squad from the three-point line. And I feel the same way about Iowa State. I feel like Prohm being there and giving them a new perspective helps them, but I don't know how far they're going to get into the tournament, and I don't know if they can win the Big 12, because you got Kansas, and Kansas has won the Big 12 13 years in a row.
So what about Kansas? They've dropped a lot of really disappointing NBA talent. They've sort of disappointed every year.
I'm gonna tell you this: outside of Chick Diallo, who just got reinstated.
Reinstated
by the NCAA stupidly. I think the whole issue behind him was dumb. They don't really have any NBA players. None. I don't think Jamari Traylor is. Frank Mason, Wayne Selden. I don't think any of those guys are NBA players. I think it's a really deep, solid team. You know, they won that gold medal for the World University Games in the summertime, where they played with everyone except for Svetislav Mikhailiuk. But they also played with Nick Moore, who plays with SMU. So they got one guy to fill in for that one spot that they lost. But with Diallo, I'm interested to see how good they are. You know, but they are they're an excellent team. They're probably going to win the Big 12 again. I'll put it that way. I hate to be super boring, but I can't not vote for them to win the Big 12. But how good are they? They're only as good as their experience can get them. That's how I feel, because they don't have NBA talent outside of Diallo.
Okay.
Oklahoma's got probably the best player in the Big 12, period, Buddy Hield. You know, Buddy Hield's a terrific player. Another guy who I would say is a dark horse, Torian Prince at Baylor, is a really nice player. I feel like he's – I saw him in the Goodwill games when Mark Few coached the USA squad. And guess who the veterans of the team was, Adam? It was Bobby Brown and Anthony Randolph.
Oy.
That's all they could get for the Goodwill games in Toronto. And that was actually Jamal Murray's coming out party, because he played for Canada in the semifinals. And they beat Team USA in an overtime game, and Murray took over the end of the game. And of the college players that were on that team, they had Ron Baker, Melo Trimble, Caleb Tarzewski at Arizona. I felt like the best player was Torian Prince at Baylor. He's kind of like a jack of all trades.
Yeah, but he was sort of the leftover from all these freshmen who came in. They're highly recruited. And
in Baylor, you mean? You know,
yes.
Isaiah Austin and Corey Jefferson, and you know, and then you had the other ones before that, like Quincy Miller and Perry Jones III. And now they got kind of this very stable roster with Prince, with Rico Gathers, who's like a great rebounder, Jonathan Motley. I feel like Baylor is a good team, but they still have some growing to do. And offensively, they've got to get better. That's another problem for them. Offensively, Scott Drew's got to start picking it up with that team, or they're going to get bounced again like they did with Georgia State in the first round.
What about Texas with Shaka Smart there now, and the Rick Barnes specter no longer hovering over them?
When Shaka left VCU, he brought in a lot of recruits to tag along with him. Guys like Eric Davis Jr., and a couple of others that I can't remember off the top of my head. And they kept a lot of the guys that were under Rick Barnes, you know, which shows me that Rick Barnes wasn't the one that was controlling everything in Texas. It was Texas's money. And so Isaiah Taylor's – I'm not saying that the players got paid. I'm just saying that it's just the brand. The brand controls the program. And so they got Isaiah Taylor at the guard spot, Cameron Ridley, who's a big boy. They still have a couple of other players that like Javon Felix. So they got a very nice up and down type of team. I feel like Shaka's new style is going to help them. you know, with the number of guards that they have.
But be on a lookout in a year or two for them?
Yeah, I would say next year. I would say next year that team's going to be pretty good. But this year, I would write a rain check on them. You know, I think they'll be a tournament team, but I don't know. I see a lot of games where Texas just gets blown out because they just don't know the system yet.
All right, so that pretty much sums up the Big 12, just the usual.
Yeah, I mean, are there any kind of teams that you always keep an eye out there for that you like in the Big 12?
No, there's Big 12. It's just usually Kansas and Kansas.
We didn't talk about Trent Johnson at TCU and Tubby Smith at Texas Tech and Bruce Weber at Kansas State.
Because they're really doing a lot. they're there this year. There's no.
I think the ones that are really in trouble. I think Trent Johnson's in trouble at TCU, and I think Travis Ford's really under the gun at Oklahoma State. They almost fired him at the end of the tournament last year, and from what I heard, the AD changed his mind, but he seriously considered it. You know, so Travis Ford, former Kentucky point guard, he's had good teams there. You know, with Markell Brown and Marcus Smart and James Anderson, who's still kicking around the NBA somehow. But he the results just have not shown, you know. And I feel like Oklahoma State wants a big name now.
Gotcha. They want to make a big splash.
Well, do you think Oklahoma State's in a position as a basketball program or a football program where they can get big names?
Well, yeah. Remember how Oklahoma used to just be a they used to just be nothing until Blake Griffin, really.
Well, Billy Tubbs was great for them when they had, like, Mookie Blaylock and Stacey King.
But they weren't, you know, they weren't getting big name recruits
even,
in.
Even when Kelvin Sampson was there, they never got good play. They never got, like, great players. You know, they went to the Final Four with the most nameless team I can ever remember in 2002. I think their best player was a guy who came from New Orleans, Hollis Price. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just a very – I think one of them was – one of his names Kevin Bookout? It was a very nameless team, and then they got the Griffin brothers.
Yeah, but we'll put it this way. If Oklahoma could do it, Oklahoma State can do it as well.
Well, they got Smart, so that was a good coup for them, but they got
to get him from Texas, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying Marcus Smart was like a super great player, cuz he was a volatile player in college anyway, his 2 years. But I mean, he's an incredibly talented player. You see him in Boston. You know, I know he just got back from an injury.
He's injured again.
Yeah, but he's very talented. Very talented. You know, he's got that ability to hit a game-winning shot for you if he has to.
Yeah, but the problem with him is he thinks everyone's a game-winning shot, and really he needs to become a better Tony Allen as opposed to trying to be a shooter.
Yeah.
Because
it was funny watching him one-on-one with Westbrook, I think, recently in a game. Because Westbrook, I think he kind of like models himself after Westbrook, and Westbrook basically out-Westbrooked him, you know?
Yeah.
It was really funny. Let's move
to the East with the 25 teams there.
You're talking about the Big East?
The Big East, the AAC,
all those teams you're talking about.
Well, let's bunch them together because when they broke up, they just sort of became two both mediocre conferences.
Well, man, how good was the Big East back in its day? I mean, my God.
It was too big. With 16 teams, if you combined two conferences, yeah, you can make a super big conference and
What was tougher? The SEC in the 90s, the ACC in the 80s, or the Big East, you know, before it broke up?
I would say the ACC in the 80s, or even the ACC in the 2000s or the 90s.
Yeah, you're talking about when Chris Paul was there and Julius Hodge was at NC State.
Julius Hodge, UNC always had teams. Maryland came off the 2002 championship.
We already talked about Wake Forest. Georgia Tech went to the national title game in 2004.
Yeah, you had, and just, well, everybody forgets, like, your Big East, you still have South Florida, you still have DuPaul, you still had Seton Hall and Rutgers who were.
But you know what's funny? Sometimes those teams would make the tournament. Like, there would be a year where they would just pop up and play well and win enough games in conference play, and the conference SOS strength of schedule was so strong that it got them into the tournament, and they would somehow make a run.
Yeah, their strength of schedule was so strong because they played each other in conference, and, you know, obviously Justin and Scott and all the other Big East lovers were like, no, this is totally wrong, but, oh, well, 10 teams made it. Well, yeah, but then 7 went out the first day because that was too many teams to make it, and then you see, with every team going 8-8 or 9-7 in conference, you just had a lot of bad teams. But since they, oh, well, we played Pitt and Syracuse and Georgetown, who were top, you know, 5 teams. Oh, of course we're just as good. No, you weren't.
Yeah, I mentioned the SEC in the 90s because I always felt like they got a bad rap. I felt like when Arkansas left the Southwest Conference and went to the SEC, that was perfect timing. Kentucky was awesome. Arkansas was really great until Corliss Williamson left. Florida went to a Final Four with Lon Kruger. LSU with Dale Brown had a few really good teams. Mississippi State went to a Final Four. That was a terrific conference. And then the bottom kind of fell out. I can't really even say when. It felt like kind of like the late 90s the bottom fell out in the SEC with basketball, because the focus started to turn up on the football.
Yeah, and then it became Kentucky and then everybody else.
And then when Kentucky fell apart after, you know, at the end of the Tubby era, then they had nothing. And then Calipari came in and boosted it back up. But we talked about Justin and Scott. Scott is a Providence Friar, tried and true. And Scott and – did I say Scott or Justin?
You mentioned both of them.
Okay. Scott's a Georgetown guy and Justin is a Providence guy. Just to make that clear, to make sure if I got it right, but they're both in the Big East. So let's talk about the Big East a little bit with their 10 teams and their Fox Sports 1 contract, because they play all of them on Fox Sports 1, including the New Year's marathon that they're going to have, where all 10 of the teams play in a 5-game stretch. Which team do you like here? I mean, Villanova's been like the monster team for the last couple of seasons since the new Big East came into fruition, but what do you think of Villanova? Why do you think they've struggled?
Because they have they put out the same team every year. It's always guard forwards and then and then one, you know, lone big man who doesn't really do anything.
Are you critical of Jay Wright?
No, it's just you can only get what you can get. And Philly, you have a lot of competition to get that Philly talent. And then you can't go too far away because, well, you can't go down to Maryland because there's Maryland there. You have Pittsburgh on the other side of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really in Syracuse just above you in the city. And
good luck recruiting in Ohio because that amount always gets them in Ohio State.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're sort of we have our guards. We will take what we can get and we'll build our team around it.
I feel like this is going to be his best team since 2006 when they had Alan Ray and Randy Foy and Kyle Lowry and Mike Nardi. All guards, by the way. So you see the trend here. But I feel like this team is terrific. Like, last year's team was good with Darren Hilliard, who got drafted by the Pistons, and Josh Hart. Ryan Arcidiacono is a decent guard. Another one that they had on that team was Phil Booth. But I feel like, and then inside they had Javon Pinkston and Uchefu. Pinkston is gone, but Uchefu is still there. He's their anchor down low, like we talk about. They play a lot of 4-out, 1-in. And their guards now are Arcidiacono, Josh Hart. They have a forward named Chris Jenkins that likes to shoot threes. And then they have a really good freshman they brought in named Jalen Brunson, who's a 6'2" guard. He's the son of Rick Brunson, who played at Temple. He played in the NBA for many years. I really like what this team provides on both ends. My problem with Villanova for a long time is that I felt like defensively they were overrated. This year, their perimeter defense has been really, really good. They've been able to squeeze out teams from being able to score. I feel like that's the extra edge that they needed, along with the star factor that Jalen Brunson brings in, the ability to just make plays out of nothing. And I feel like they're going to have that extra edge to get them over the top. I feel like this is going to be a really good – I think this team's better than the team in 09 that beat Pittsburgh in that great game in the Elite Eight. And they had Scotty Reynolds and Dante Cunningham. I feel like this team is better than that team.
Okay, that's
– I'll give you that much for Villanova. I think that this is – This is a loaded team. I'll give them the L word. I think they're loaded.
Oh, okay, so outside of, before we get to Providence, and we already mentioned Marquette, is there anything else?
Well, Henry Ellenson's a nice player.
We're going to get to him.
Oh, you want to talk about him? Okay.
Well, he will be, I believe, NBA lottery.
Okay, cool. We'll talk about him in a second.
So outside of those three schools, what do we have in this Big East? Georgetown
struggled with – well, they lost a game in double overtime to Radford on a buzzer beater. And then they lost to Maryland on the road. And then they beat Wisconsin and then lost to Duke in Madison Square Garden in a non-conference tournament. So they had incredibly tough competition to start the season. They have a really good guard named Devonta Smith-Rivera. They've got L.J. Peak. They've got Isaac Copeland, who were both highly ranked recruits about a year ago. It's a good team. They got a lot of people in place. They lost a lot of seniors from last year's team that went to the NCAA tournament, went to the second round. So they've got a little bit of recovery time, but I feel like they've got a lot of potential there. I think they are definitely a tournament team. The other one that I like there is Xavier. Xavier has looked really good coming out of the gate. You know, they had the team with Matt Stainbrook. They hung in there with Arizona in the Sweet 16. They have a lot of the same guys back this year outside of Stainbrook who graduated. James Farr, J.P. Makura, Trevon Blewett, Jalen Reynolds. That team is just tough. They're tough as nails. You know, all those Xavier teams are the same, you know. The other team is Butler. Butler's a team that's hard to get rid of.
They're a team of nobodies every year, but they...
They're like that... You know how Shawn Michaels always said that joke about, you know, Owen Hart being the nugget? You know, that you can't flush? That's Butler. Butler is that nugget that you can't flush. That's what they are. They're hard to get rid of. You know, Notre Dame struggled with Butler in the second round of the tournament. Notre Dame was a great team last year, you know? For them to not be able to get rid of Butler in regulation tells me that Butler is a well-coached team. And they scored 144 points against the Citadel. Did you see that?
No.
144 points in regulation against the Citadel.
That's more on the Citadel than
well,
Butler,
the,
I believe.
Well, the coach there that just got there, he had coached at Virginia Military Institute, VMI. And I don't know if you're that, like, in the know about college basketball. VMI is one of those super duper, like, fast paced, like Billy Tubbs type of teams, where Loyola Marymount type of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's coaching there at the Citadel, and they did the same thing. They basically just said, let's run it out, and Butler just blew the doors off of them.
Whoops. All right, now back to the Big East and the NBA implications with Henry Ellison. You saw him against LSU.
I saw him I actually saw him. A game before that, I think they lost a game to Belmont, and he was awesome. The thing that sets apart Ellison is that he can rebound. He's a big body. I'm not saying this as an insult. He reminds me of Andrea Bargnani. That's who he reminds me of.
But you just said he could rebound.
Bargnani can rebound. He was a decent rebounder for his size.
Until he decided he didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, that's on him. But Ellison is a guy, like, you look at him and you're like, it's a buzz cut white boy, he's really tall, I don't know. And then he starts playing, and then you're like, oh man, he's got game. You know, he can shoot threes, he can rebound. He's not super duper quick, but he's kind of like one of those guys that's deceptive. You know, Nick Stauskas was like that at Michigan, where all of a sudden he would take it off the dribble and dunk it. And you were like, oh my god. You know, Ellison is sort of the same way. He's a really, really talented player. And he plays for his size. You know, he plays like a 7-footer or a 6'11 guy.
Okay, so that's...
And now we're going to have to go ahead and get this out of the way with Providence, right?
Okay. So is it a good decision or a bad decision for Chris Dunn to stay?
A great decision. because he would have been maybe a late first round pick if he had actually come out last year. There weren't a lot of great guards. I mean, look, Cameron Payne wound up going in the first round, okay?
And he was going to go right beneath that group with Jerian Grant and
Tyus Jones and all of those guys.
And right, and he could have easily fallen to like 28th.
Exactly.
You come back, you're the second or third best, probably third best point guard right now.
Who's that? Chris Dunn?
Yes.
I think Dunn is right there with Denzel Valentine as the best point guard in college basketball. He's 6'3". He plays great defense. He leads the country. He's like second in the country.
Well, I'm saying in NBA. We're not saying as good as they are in the NBA mind.
You see, I was getting on my tangent, and you stopped me.
But Valentine's a senior, and we'll be lucky to see him in the second round.
No, I think Dunn would have probably been like fifth on the depth chart. You know, I think that Dayton game in the NCAA tournament where he turned the ball over a ton really exposed him, that he needed to play better in big games. And so I think he decided to come back based mainly off of that. And also because DeLon Wright and Jerian Grant had already kind of established themselves as first-round material over the course of the season, he was going to have to be a guy that kind of fought his way into the first round.
So now where is he?
He's a lottery pick. I think he'll be one of the – he's going to be one of the two guards, like the first two guards taken.
You think he'll be above like Malik Newman, who you mentioned how you like, and Briscoe?
Newman maybe not, because Newman's overall talent is so explosively good, but over Briscoe for sure. I don't think he's going to get ahead of Jamal Murray. I think Jamal Murray is going to be a top five guy, but I think that
Jamal Murray is more of a shooting guard.
He is, but he can put it on the floor if you watched him play a little bit. But Dunn is terrific. He's a true point guard. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and try to score 30 points, but he will if he has to. He reminds me of Kemba Walker, you know, and I know Chris Criscolo is, like, plugging his ears right now, but, you know, Kemba was, like, one of those guys in college his junior year at UConn where he could literally take over a game by himself. And Chris Dunn can do the same thing. I watched him play in the Wooden Legacy out in California. He would just take over games, and he would get saddled with foul trouble. And I watched a game against Illinois where he couldn't make a shot, and he would just defensively shut down the other guard. He's one of those guys that's going to make a play no matter what it is. You know, Denzel Valentine's a little unique. He's kind of like a big body, small forward type. So I don't know how he's going to translate in the NBA, but Chris Dunn is a true point guard. You know?
So then how good is his Providence team?
It's as good as he can make it, which means they're going to be pretty good. You know, they got other players like Ben Bentel and Rodney Bullock and some other ones. But and Ed Cooley, I'm not like the biggest fan of Ed Cooley. You know, I'm not saying he's Johnny Jones bad. I'd kind of put him on the same level as like Quanzo Martin, who's at Cal, who we'll talk about in a minute. But I feel like he's a guy that can carry a team far, only as far as his talent will let him, you know. And then he lets the talent do the work. But man, Chris Dunn can do a lot of work. I'll put it that way, you know. Right. So the Justin Rosero section of the show is over.
Well, anyone else in the East, even the AAC, and you know, it's funny. This is the Big East and the Atlantic Conference with teams in Nebraska, Texas, and. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma.
Tulane is in the American Conference.
Like Tulane is just, it was just basically Connecticut and Cincinnati who couldn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And Connecticut tried so hard to get out.
It's not that they couldn't get out. They bought in because they had football programs. The Big East was the team that was out.
Yeah, basically they had football program, but nobody, no other conference wanted their football program because they're not that good.
Exactly. I think Villanova had a case with their football program, but they decided not to do it because of the D2 to D1 upgrade was going to take a little bit more money, I guess. You know, so mm-hmm. they decided, okay, let's take Tulane, let's take Tulsa out of Conference USA, let's take SMU, who's been so bad ever since they got to the American. Did you watch Paxton Lynch for Memphis? He scored 7 touchdowns in the first half on SMU.
No.
7 touchdowns.
That's sad, but so basically the American just going to be Cincinnati and Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
and then
well,
any NBA guys in that group?
Daniel Hamilton's very good. That's a UConn player. Amita Brima's a good shot blocker. He's got the size, kind of like Gorgui Jang, only he's not offensive. He doesn't have really a lot of talent offensively. He's still got to work on that. They've got Ronnie Purvis, who originally was at NC State and he transferred. He's played pretty well. Kevin Ollie's just got a way to motivate his guys. He's really good at that. He did it all the way in the national title a year or two ago. So you got to watch out with them. Cincinnati's just a great defense. I don't think they have any NBA players. I don't think Octavius Ellis is one. I don't think Troy Copain is one. I don't think Gary Clark is one. Like, I think they're all just solid college players. I'm trying to think of a really good comparison with Cincinnati. It's kind of like when Washington State had Tony Bennett, and they didn't have any NBA players, but they had decent players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of reminds me of that. I wouldn't count out Memphis entirely. Everyone is trying to jump on this fire Josh Pastner train, but I've been watching Memphis a little bit, and they're not a bad team at all. Dedrick Lawson is like one of the better freshmen that I've seen this year.
Yeah, but what has he done really before this? He hasn't done...
He came out of nowhere. You know, the only problem with freshmen that become one-and-dones is that if they were lower-tier type of top 100, top 50 guys, then you kind of have to earn your spot. It's kind of sad. You know, like, there are guys that, like, in the top part of that McDonald's All-American group that won't do anything and still make it to the NBA and get picked in the lottery based on potential, and then they'll have freshmen that play their asses off, but they won't get a look because they weren't in that slot from the beginning.
Well, they weren't in the slot, and they might just be an inch too short, or their jump is 2 inches too slow.
I'll give you a good example. When UCLA when Ben Howland had to make a push at UCLA, he got a really good recruiting class in 2012. He brought in Shabazz Muhammad, he brought in Kyle Anderson, and then he also brought in Norman Powell and Jordan Adams. Well, Shabazz was kind of overrated. I guess it's just that. I know he's played better in Minnesota, but really he's not that good. And then there's Kyle Anderson, who's wound up playing pretty well for the Spurs, and he had a good sophomore year. But Jordan Adams and Norman Powell played about as hard as they possibly could to get to the spots that they were at. And Jordan Adams had to stay into his sophomore year, and Norman Powell had to stay into his junior year before they could declare for the NBA draft. And now, look at it. I think they're all kind of on an even keel in the NBA. I think one player is as good as the other players.
Yeah, but, you know, with some of that, sometimes you need to, you know, you don't have the potential, and you don't have the size, and you can see that with, like, Norman Powell. He didn't have the intangibles.
No, he didn't. Yeah, he had to gain that.
So that's the thing, is you could be productive, but who in the NBA isn't productive? Who you could get, second-round picks who put up 20 and 10s or a dime a dozen, really.
Well, with the offensive explosion, we're at a point where everybody's averaging 4 points and 2 rebounds a game at the least.
So, well, it's like college football with when the spread system became popular. Every QB was, throwing 50 touchdowns. It's like, well,
like Paxton Lynch,
yeah.
And now everybody's saying that he's going to be a top pick along with Connor Cook, who threw maybe like what 20 touchdowns for Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it's like okay, so you go based on combine, or do you go based on the results of a tilted college system? You know, it's hard to say.
That's why these guys get paid big bucks, and that's why they're usually fired after they make quick wrong decision.
But college is the opposite. It's tilted the other way. These guys don't garner up big-time stats. And the ones that do are at really small schools where if they do get picked, it's because the scouts are really smart. Like when Damian Lillard got picked, and then C.J. McCollum got picked a year later. You know,
they're the ones. If you're dominating all the lower tiers, you are the, you know, like Cameron Payne, okay, you are the king of the small mid-majors.
He was the best player in the mid-majors. He was the best guard amongst
Best player, period, in the small conferences. Mid-majors, okay, you have a couple players who are in there, but mostly it's just, well, he's not playing well now, but what if he comes into our system? What can he do? And
yeah, it works to their favor. It works to the favor of the players to play against the lesser competition. But these players, they do want to play against better competition. They want to show what they can do, you know. And that shows in the tournament. If they play well in the tournament, then you got something. CJ McCollum played well against Duke in the tournament.
Oh yeah, that's how you become just a fast riser. And
yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's stay out west. Pack 10, 12, Pack 14, Pack.
Well, you know, the one other team I want to mention, the American, before we leave, is Tulsa with Frank Haith. They got Shaquille Harrison and James Woodard, and James Woodard's brother Jordan is a senior at Oklahoma. That's a team to watch. So now we can go ahead and trip on.
Well, I could watch them on the CBI or the CIT. Well, they could win that tournament again for the third year in a row.
Well, man, I hate Frank Haith. I mean, Frank Haith has just been an underachiever. You know who his head coach was? It was like his tutor. It was Rick Barnes at Texas. He was Rick Barnes' assistant at Texas.
Ugh.
That's all you need to know there. All right, the Pac-12, which used to be the Pac-8, and then it was the Pac-10, and now it is the Pac-12. And they're actually, unbelievably, there actually are 12 teams in the Pac-12, unlike the Big Ten, which has 12 teams, and the Big 12, which has 10 teams.
And this is a very underrated conference because nobody watches them because their games are always on before.
The past couple of years, I would agree that they were underrated. You know, Arizona had some awesome teams with guys like Rondae Hollis Jefferson, Aaron Gordon, T.J. McConnell played on that team, Nick Johnson, Sean Miller put together some really good teams. They just couldn't beat Kaminsky. You know, every time they played Wisconsin in that Elite Eight game, Kaminsky would eat Tarzewski's lunch. Mm-hmm. That's what would happen, and that was a killer for them. This year, I watched them in the Wooden Legacy, and going into that, I saw a couple other games with Arizona. They don't look that great this year. You know, I don't see like a top five, number one seed, number two seed type of team out in the West Coast this year out of Arizona. That's my one problem with them. UCLA. It's so weird with Steve Alford because he had a talented team when he got there in 2014 and they went to the Sweet 16. And then they got incredibly lucky. I don't know if you remember this, but they beat SMU on a goaltend. And then instead of playing Iowa State in the second round, they played UAB. And they beat the snot out of UAB and they played Gonzaga in the Sweet. Then they got to the Sweet 16 for a second year in a row and lost to Gonzaga. This year, they haven't looked great either. But then again, we said the same thing about them last year, and they wound up in the Sweet 16. Is Steve Alford the new Steve Lavin?
Quite possibly.
That was Steve Lavin's MO. He would every time they wanted him fired, he would get to the Sweet 16, and you were like, "Well, you can't fire him. He went to the Sweet 16."
Yeah, and then he'd just do absolutely nothing. And
yeah,
USC is back to falling off the map again.
Well, they brought in Andy Enfield, who was the Florida Gulf Coast guy. You remember Dunk City?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He rode that as far as he could, which is quickly out of there.
Utah had DeLon Wright. They still have Jakob Pertl. That guy has got some really nice talent. He's from Austria. He can score. He's a better scorer now than he was last year. Cal with Kwanzo Martin, that's where the interest is because they brought in Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rabb to go with Tyrone Wallace. All of those guys are considered like right around the lottery. Have you been able to watch either Brown or Rabb?
I have seen Brown, and he is he does have very big size, mm-hmm. is what I noticed, and he does have a little motor on him.
Who's that? You talk about Brown?
Yeah. For his size, because he has to be like 6'8", 6'7".
He can gun it. He'll dunk on you in a hurry. You know, he's one of those kinds of players. Rabb is just kind of like a bully on the block type of player. I don't want to call him Aaron Gordon because he's better offensively than Aaron Gordon was in college. But he's one of those like 10-10 type of guys. He will easily get 15 points and 11 rebounds in a game. He's really, really nice player. You know, that's really the best thing I can say about Ivan Rabb. Very nice player. You know, but Jaylen Brown is explosive. He's one of those guys that on a good day could just really make your day miserable.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there are a couple guys in the Washington area who are...
Well, Andrew Andrews has been playing well. as the car. Don't laugh. His name is Andrew Andrews. But he's played well. They got two guys that I've watched that are freshmen that have played well. His name is Marquise Chris. He's played very well. The guy that I think's got one and done potential there is DeJounte Murray. He's a taller guard. He averages 8 rebounds a game. He averages more than a steal. He's just a really nice player. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Elfrid Payton when he was at Louisiana Lafayette. He's one of those kinds of players.
Okay.
So I don't know how good the Pac-12 really is. I also would say keep an eye out for Oregon. I can't really say there's any NBA players for sure. They have a good player that came in as a transfer named Chris Boucher, but they've been playing pretty well too. But the team to really keep an eye on is Cal, because they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent over there. I just don't know how well. It's kind of like the same situation LSU is in the SEC. I just don't know how quickly they can put it together, because they only have 1 year to do it.
And let us not forget, we got Gary Payton Jr.
at Oregon State. Yeah, he's nice. You know, he's a little smaller than I thought. You know, it shouldn't surprise me, because I don't think Gary Payton was that tall either, huh?
He was 6'4".
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if he's 6'4", is he?
Gary Payton Jr.?
Gary Payton II, yeah.
I just know he's there.
He's 6'3", so a shade under. But he's a little smaller, but he's a good rebounder. He's a good assist man. He's a chip off the old block. I don't think he'll never be as good as Gary Payton. Gary Payton was a Hall of Fame point guard, for God's sakes. But I'll never ever say that. Let's play our little game quick here with the Pac-12, where we try to name an NBA player right off the top.
We got Gary Payton in Oregon State, so let's...
I'll try to find a random one. How about Steve Johnson?
Okay.
That's a random one.
Arizona, you mentioned Aaron Gordon.
This was guard you back in the 80s and
90s. Stanley Robinson, Mike Bibby.
Mm-hmm. There's a bunch. Kenny Lofton. He didn't play in the end. I think Kenny Lofton probably could have been a good NBA player, though. He was good in college. Sean Elliott, that's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Andre Iguodala.
Yep.
Let's talk about Arizona State.
Ike Diagu.
What about Byron Scott?
He is not doing too well right now, is he?
All right, we're limiting the Laker talk today, okay?
Okay, he is just doubling down on...
Kobe got to 19 in a game I saw.
But he is just doubling down on the hard line.
What is with the insistence that he does not sit Kobe for games? That's got to be coming from the top. It can't be coming from him. I just can't... I know he's cushy with Bryant, but I just can't understand that. Like, you've got to sit the guy.
That's
my take on the Lakers too.
I don't know. Kobe's not going to sit down.
It is terrible. All right, Cal Berkeley.
Leon Poe of the champion Celtics.
Yeah, I'm sort of struggling with this one too.
Jason Kidd.
Oh yeah, and Tracy Murray, huh? Tracy Murray was his backcourt mate. Colorado. This one's easy for me.
Cordell Stewart.
he played basketball.
Whoops. Alec Burks. Recently.
Chauncey Billups.
Chauncey Billups did his 2 years at Colorado.
Oregon,
Aaron Brooks.
Luke Ridenour. You know, Ernie Kent had some really nice teams at Oregon for like about a 5-year stretch, where they had Luke Ridenour and Luke Jackson, and remember Freddie Jones, who played for the Pacers?
Yep.
He tried to dunk everything. We already talked about Oregon State. Stanford. Mike Montgomery had some nice teams at Stanford.
The Lopez Twins.
Mad Dog Mark Madsen.
With all his dancing in the
dancing for eternity.
Josh Childress.
UCLA doesn't count, so we're skipping them. Okay. But seriously, what just one guy out of the wooden era, even recently for UCLA.
Oh, let's go Kevin Love. It seems to be, or Westbrook. You just mentioned that was the last real recruiting gold.
How about Reggie Miller? He was in the lost era in the late 80s when they weren't so good.
They were, yeah, that was really kind of the lost era for them.
Yeah,
between their little
heydays. Walt Hazard was coaching the team. They weren't that great. You know, they weren't that great. They picked it back up with Herrick, but we all know why. USC.
USC really came back to prominence with the alleged illegal recruiting of O.J. Mayo.
How about Swaggy P and Nick Young?
Yeah, that was right on the heels of that. And then all of a sudden, Gabe Pruitt was there too, and then all of a sudden, people stopped going to USC again.
Well, they got Vucevic, and Kevin O'Neill got Vucevic, but then after Vucevic left, they fell off the map again. They fired O'Neill, and they brought in Andy Enfield, and they've gone nowhere since. Utah.
Oh, Andre Miller.
Tom Chambers, who forever will be dunking on Mark Jackson somewhere on YouTube.
And then Andrew Bogut.
Bogut won Player of the Year at Utah.
Mm-hmm. The only time ever the number one pick in the NFL and NBA came from the same college.
Yeah, Keith Van Horn was a beast in college, too. I always forget how good he was. Washington.
Washington would be, they're just the undersized Nate Robinson and Isaiah Thomas. Just all we get are 5'8" point guards.
Terrence Ross is not the tallest guy in the world. Tony Roten. I'll go with Brandon Roy. Brandon Roy was in the same backcourt with Nate Robinson for a couple of years.
How mismatched was that size?
Man, Lorenzo Romar, he did it again this year with the freshmen. He knows how to get good players. He just doesn't know how to put the shit together.
That seemed to be the problem with Washington as a whole. Even the football program has talent, but they just can't put it together ever.
They had that one undefeated year with Don James, the late Don James. But who was that, Steve Entman? Remember, that was like the star player they had on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Steve Entman. And then Washington State.
Washington State would be Drew Bledsoe. That would be Clay Thompson.
Yeah, I was about to say the obvious one. I didn't know if you were going to name drop it. Aaron Baines.
Aaron Baines went there?
Yeah, you know, there was two – the best players, Tony – this is why Tony Bennett is kind of a quiet genius. The only two good players that he coached Clay Thompson for like a year or two, but he was just a rotation guy. But the best players he coached outside of him were Kyle Weaver and Aaron Baines. Those are the best players he coached at Washington State.
That's overachieving.
Oh, beyond overachieving. I think he's overachieving at Virginia right now. So when people put, like, Malcolm Brogdon in the draft, like, and say, man, look at Justin Anderson, look at Joe Harris, I'm like, no! Tony Bennett's the genius on that team, you know?
Yep. So, okay, we've gone for the majors. There has to be one or two mid-major people we like for the NBA.
Domantas Sabonis is a gamer. Now, his stats don't always show it because he gets in foul trouble because he's super aggressive. But, man, he's Arvidas' son. He can play. Kyle Collinsworth at BYU can play, too. That's a nice player right there. In the Atlantic 10, I would have said E.C. Matthews at Rhode Island, your guys, but he tore his ACL.
Yeah, he is done.
There's a boy named at Richmond. I'm trying to remember his name right now, and I'm for some reason I think his name is Terry Allen. And if you look at his stats over at Richmond, he is killing it.
Well, what about Malik Pope at San Diego State?
He is not an NBA player.
No.
No, don't buy the hype. He's 6'9", and they say he can play the small full spot. And San Diego State has had a good habit of getting good small forwards and kind of like wing people to go play there, like Kawhi Leonard and J.J. O'Brien. But I'm telling you, and Jamal Franklin, but I'm telling you, don't buy the hype. San Diego State's good this year. Skylar Spencer is a good player. But outside of that, I wouldn't really put too much stock. I would say James Webb at Boise State out in the West. He's a nice player.
Okay, so who's the most under-the-radar team this year? Who's going to come out of nowhere?
The most under the radar team, the team that's going to come out of nowhere. I would probably say Texas Arlington. They've already gotten two upsets early in the year against some pretty good teams, including I think one of them was Ohio State. They just got a nice team with a lot of seniors on it. I'd keep an eye out on them. That team that they won an NCAA tournament game, it would not shock me in the least.
Okay. Anything were we missing your college basketball world?
Well, with Kyle Wilcher. I mean, he played on that Kentucky team in 2012. He transferred to Gonzaga, and he's a senior now. People think he's All-American. I know he can't play in the NBA as a big man because he just doesn't have the size. But do you think he can play in the NBA?
I don't. No. In order to play undersized in the NBA, you have to just be an overachiever.
Well, he can shoot threes. That's the one thing he can
The problem is now you have a lot of people who shoot threes.
Well, they all are now. I mean, All the NBA players are shooting threes now. Even the big men. Look at DeMarcus Cousins. How many threes has he taken this year? The answer is too many.
Everybody's shooting threes, so the fact that you can shoot it, well, that just, a while ago that used to be a commodity, but now that means nothing.
Give me a one-and-doneer that you are keeping an eye on personally.
Besides Ben Simmons, the two kids from Cal I am interested in.
But Brown more.
Being Rabbit and Brown.
You like Dwayne Bacon, you said.
Bacon, yes, of Florida State. I like him.
You like Ellinson?
Ellinson. No. That seems to be more your guy.
I would keep an eye on Jalen Brunson at Villanova. I think by the end of the year, he's going to be their best player.
Okay.
And then obviously, Kentucky's too obvious with their backcourt. I can't just say that.
Then we'll see if maybe Diamond Stone turns into something.
I've got my doubts. And then Jalen Adams at UConn. I think that he's going to wind up playing the point guard by the end of the season. And if they're a good team. And also Tyler Davis at Texas A&M. He reminds me of Tobias Harris. So if he winds up being as good as Tobias Harris, that's a steal. If he winds up going one and done and gets late and slips late into the first round.
Okay.
That's going to be wrapping it up. Did you enjoy your renewed college experience?
Last year I took a little time off from watching college basketball, and it's good to get back into it.
Well, this is a more wide open year. Last year was so obvious. There was like five teams and then everybody else. Kentucky, Duke, Wisconsin, Arizona, and I'm skipping one more, but Virginia. Like, those were the best teams. Outside of that, there was really not much going on. This year, it's a little more open. I'm not sure which team's going to be, surging ahead of the other teams. We still got some undefeated teams left, like Iowa State and Kentucky and Villanova and Michigan State. But we'll see how it goes. I like the renewed interest from Justin because of Chris Dunn. So gives me another guy to have midnight chats with, because I love NBA. We talk about it every week. But, man, I love college basketball. College basketball runs in my blood. I love it. But, all right, then. So that's going to be finishing up this two-parter. I'm glad everybody stuck around, even though it went a little longer than we thought. But it was enjoyable. Did you enjoy this college version before we get out of here and we step back up to the big boy land?
Why not? It was, nobody expected it. two-parter to get this, but we had a lot more to talk about than I thought we did. I thought it was just, let's talk about the eight freshmen who are going to be gone, and then, oh, wait, there's this team, too, and this team's good, and, oh, we forgot about this, and then eventually you get back to...
That's what happens when you have 350 teams.
Yeah.
It's not instead of 30. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Anthony Reich, and we'll see y'all again.